Support for The Dirtbag comes from cable listeners and from One Green World, a family-owned nursery and garden center located in southeast Portland, providing fruiting trees and shrubs, berries, vines, unique citrus, nut trees, vegetables, and much more to people all over the United States. Information at www.onegreenworld.com.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. The time is 11 a.m. Next up is The Dirtbag.
Well, Mr. Jim, we've arrived at the second Wednesday of the month at 11 o'clock. It's time for The Dirtbag, a garden variety show. Welcome, Jim.
Hi, Glenn. And we probably are the only radio garden show in the area, so it's kind of fun.
All right. Well, that Jim is Jim Gilbert here, my co-pilot. For the last 10 years at least, maybe 13 now. I can't remember.
Yeah, I've lost track.
Yeah.
Doing it for a while.
I did figure out that it will be later this year, but this is just astounding. This will be my 50th year in radio.
Wow.
50.
Wow.
Yeah, started in college.
You don't even look that old, Glenn.
That's because your eyes aren't so good anymore. Yeah, you know, another aside before we get started on the real show here, but remember, this is a garden variety show. I have been writing for the last year or so, a very small, short column in The Bee Line, which is the monthly publication from the Oregon State Beekeepers Association. And it's my favorite plant, my favorite bee plant of the month. And for this month, well, actually, it's going to be next month, February, I chose filberts, or hazelnuts, as they're called, because the catkins are one of the earliest sources of pollen for honeybees. But I started this column by saying that you can tell an old-time Oregonian, if he's or she is a native Oregonian, whether they call them filberts or hazelnuts. So we're both in the filbert camp here.
We are. You know, but it's interesting. Over the years, I've sort of changed it a little bit.
Yeah, it's hard not to.
I talk to so many people that don't call them filberts that I just sort of now call them hazelnuts, too, most of the time.
Well, at least we know what they are as filberts.
We sure do.
We know what that name means.
I used to think about starting a business called Gilbert's Filberts, but...
Oh, that would have been good.
Nice, yeah. But I've decided to grow more than filberts.
Yeah, you're limited there.
Yeah,
years ago, I actually created and produced, along with one of my brothers and our wives. Well, it wasn't my wife, but my partner at the time, an Oregon trivia game. Only Oregon Trivia, it was called. It's long out of print now. Actually, I did a second edition of that 7 years later, or we called it a second generation. But people would say, oh, man, you should take that elsewhere. Nah, you know, we only have a pretty much limited audience there when it's called Only Oregon Trivia.
I'd love to find out a way to get one of those, Glenn. That'd be fun.
But, well, you'd do well at it. You know, many of the questions are dated now that were timely there, but not the geography and history and
That sounds cool. So,
It was fun.
You still have one of those?
Oh, yeah.
I'll
try to set you up with one.
I'd love to see it.
Or at least the deck of questions. I have those.
Yeah, I'd really like to see it. I really would.
It was, as we advertised it, it was 1,800 questions, 1,799 answers.
Wow.
So the question is always, what question doesn't have an answer? Yeah, you want to guess on that one? Where the name Oregon comes from.
Oh.
It's not officially decided.
Uh-huh. Interesting.
Yep, tis. Yeah. But anyway, we have digressed.
We have. It's funny, though, when you were talking about this is a gardening show and about gardening, it made me think of KMHD, a radio station I listen to for music. And they talk about jazz without boundaries, and we could say this is gardening without boundaries.
Well, that's true, unless you have deer problem.
Mm.
That's just a little pun there.
That's pretty good, yeah. Got it, Glenn.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, what do we have lined up here? Well, a new feature that we started last month, which I thought was pretty fun, and that we will be talking just briefly, ever so briefly, about the tool that we have used the most in the last month or 30 days, or 28 days, as it turns out this time. And we actually have a couple of questions that listeners, in this case, listener, has written in, who didn't call in, but he emailed thedirtbag@kboo.org, and then that makes its way to me, and now we can answer them. We'll take care of that. Our plant of the month, fall planted potatoes. We will talk about how cold it's going to be, and if there are some extra measures that you should take, if it's going to help at all. This is some cold weather we have forecasted here, as I'm telling Jim. One of the forecasts, I think it was 4 days where the temperature doesn't even get above freezing. Doesn't even get above 29 or 28 or something. So that's some cold weather for here. And then dormant pruning, and Jim has brought in a couple of his hand tools that are well used, so he knows what he's talking about because he uses those so much. And that'll lead to tool sharpening. And our dictionary term is chilling period, which is very important and just fun to learn about.
And appropriate.
Boy, I guess. And then a documentary update. And it's not because of the new year, but I'm not going to do what's annoying me this year. I'm instead going to just mention what I'm grateful for. And what I am grateful for right at the moment is my mother, who had successful hip surgery. The doctors implanted a metal piece into her femur and repaired her hip when she fell in front of all of our family. And even what I'm more grateful for is my brother. There are four brothers here. My brother, number three, who lives in Eugene, where my mother does too, and my father. And he's a retired physician and he's been just talking to the doctors and taking care of mom and dad, and he's there and we're not. So I'm very grateful for that. And my mom's 93, so she just doesn't snap back from these things. So anyway, I'm grateful for those two things.
Yeah, sounds good. I'm happy for you, Glenn.
Well, thank you.
That she worked out.
Yeah.
It's worked out.
Well, she's got a long way to go yet, but still in the hospital, actually.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Jim, what tool did you use the most, do you think?
Well, funny thing you asked.
Right there, huh?
I brought it to the studio. It's my pair of Baco pruners that I like very much. And we have a new greenhouse at the nursery, which is we call our rain house because it's a greenhouse that doesn't really get heated. It's just covered. And inside that greenhouse, we have plants that we want to protect from the weather, but we're not so concerned about hardiness. And so when it's raining, I can go inside there and work,
which
is pretty darn cool. So
do you use your pruners inside this rain house?
Absolutely.
What are you doing?
Well, I'm pruning apricots. I'm pruning peaches.
These are in pots.
Nectar? No, they're in the ground.
They're in the ground in the greenhouse.
That's
or rainhouse.
Rainhouse, yeah. That's what's really fascinating about it, and amazing. You know, the plants in pots. I'm very familiar with those in greenhouses and their rate of growth. But boy, you put them in the ground. Whew, I mean, there's...
They go faster?
12 feet tall. Rubbing against the roof, you know, and so pruning was pretty darn important, and I'm still at it.
So why did you cover these?
Because I said we may have mentioned on this show, growing of apricots in our climate is challenging.
Okay.
And
Keep the rain off.
It's to keep the rain off. And part of it is testing varieties or just basically saving them because we think they have enough value. We don't want them to die, and then secondly, I can get some fruit.
We'll see.
And I love apricots. I got a few last year, but they were just newly planted. This year, I'm really licking my chops.
So these, you're going to have to keep these shorter than the rain house.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's okay. I mean, but
yeah. Well, 12 feet is that's tall enough.
It's tall, very much tall enough. And I'm bringing them down to where I can stretch my arm out the tip of my arm, and that's as tall as they're allowed to go.
Yeah. All right. Well, the tool or tools that I've used, because they're all in concert with each other, is a pitchfork, my hand truck, and a garbage can. And because I've been moving wood chips from across the street where there was they took out some trees and chipped them, and then from another property, which I had some dumped last year, and finally got those all moved, but been doing a lot of that when it was warmer, and so that was nicer. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that's just one of my favorite ways to move material is a hand truck and a garbage can rather than a wheelbarrow, because I don't have a lot of room between my beds for a wheelbarrow. And with the hand truck, I can get through pretty narrow spaces, and then it's easy enough to pick up. Well, easy if I don't fill the garbage can too tall with wet chips. If they're dry chips, then I can pack it full and then carry it and dump it. So anyway, that's what I've been using.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's great, Glenn. I should probably also mention, since I brought it, I mean, we'll talk about tools a little bit later, I have this little handsaw. It's a Silky Pocket Boy, and it's a very small handsaw, which for what I'm doing is also very handy because some of these plants have really pretty strong root sprouts coming up.
Yep.
But a big saw is hard to fit in there, but this little saw works quite nice.
Well, when he says little, he means it. It's folded right now, and when in its folded condition, it's shorter than the pruners, his hand pruners.
Yeah, it's probably 6 inches, something like that.
Yeah.
Very handy.
And, of course, then it's twice as long when he folds it out.
Yeah.
But you can hear it snapping into place there. Oh, he just cut himself, too.
No, it's
sharp.
Yeah, it's a nice little saw.
Yep.
We'll talk about it later.
Okay. Well, and as I mentioned here, we have two questions here. This is from David in Cornelius, who wrote in November and then again in December. I think I forgot to answer his question on our November show.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll do it right now. He says, "Hello, guys." That's us, Jim.
Uh-huh.
"I noticed this summer my zucchini and cucumbers suddenly," that's capitalized, "were afflicted with a colony of stink bug-looking bugs nesting in and killing my plants. I finally started spraying an emulsion of hot peppers, soap, and Listerine. Seemed to help, but damage was done. What can I do next season to prevent?" Well, I think what we need before even attempting to answer this question, so we're going to have to punt on this one, is we need to identify what the bug was. And was that the bug that was doing the damage? I mean, it's likely, but you never know. So, Dave in Cornelius, maybe you have a photo of it that you would be happy to send us, or you could describe it another way. But stink bugs can do damage, but I don't know. I'm wondering if it could be the cucumber beetle, which doesn't look like a stink bug. It looks more like a ladybug, but it's a different color, and it's a little more oblong than a ladybug. But anyway, Dave, so if you can send us a picture. and we'll go from there.
Yeah.
And then just the other just general comment that I'll make is the hot pepper, soap, and Listerine. You know, there's lots of books out there about these home remedies, and I'm just leery on that because you could also be hitting and killing beneficial insects that happen to be there too. So be careful.
Yeah, IDing the pest is important, and also there's county extension offices that might be a good resource for that, or master gardeners that could help tell if he had a photo or an actual bug itself, you know, that's preserved in some way, plastic
that's
bag.
That's right. Yeah, right. Of course, now we wouldn't do that. Although this morning, my wife was on the phone looking out the window while she was talking, and she noticed bumblebees flying to and from a nest underneath our porch. Yeah. Bumblebee nest this time of year?
Pretty darn
That's
early.
Crazy.
It is.
No, there's probably leftover, but generally what happens is with bumblebees and yellow jackets, but not honeybees because they don't hibernate or anything, but this type of bumblebee, this red rump that I call it, and maybe all bumblebees, they don't overwinter as a nest. They overwinter individually as queens. And then they go dormant, if you will, maybe hiding out in leaf piles or in wood pile or something like that. And when it starts getting warmer, then they will emerge from their slumbers and provision the nest. But these bees were flying in and out like it was a nest. And I'm not sure why.
Well,
but it was astounding to see that.
It was funny, you know, I up until just this cold spell, I was sort of worried. I mean, I was actually noticing some bulbs pushing at the end of December, and I thought, this is not good. But I'm sort of actually kind of happy to have some cold weather.
It helps our plants
And the biggest danger, of course, is things push out early and then get hurt by frost. You know,
and so things have pushed out early because it has been, you know, record warm in December. So, all right. So, anyway, now let's see. We have Dave in Cornelius writing again a month later. Here says, "Greetings, dirtbags." That's us, Jim. "I need more soil for my raised beds. What are some, quote, inexpensive, unquote, sources? Should I raid the coastal rivers? Seems like all soil is, one, polluted, or two, commodified." Well, Dave and Cornelius, the best source that I can recommend is right there underfoot, almost literally, and that is the soil in your paths. So not only do you raise the soil level in your beds by shoveling some soil in there from the path, but you lower the path, and hence you have more raised beds. And the benefit of a raised bed, mostly, I would argue, is that a bed doesn't heat up until it dries out, warm up in the spring. And so by having the soil higher, it dries out sooner. And so having a lower path essentially achieves the same thing as a raised bed. Because the end result will be the same. But you're also going to be raising the bed. Also, compost is another great way to something to add to a raised bed. But it takes time for that. But the thing to keep in mind is that you don't have to have it full to the top the first year. You can still plant in it and work on it after 2 or 3 years to get it where you want it. So those are those are very inexpensive. Those are free. Got anything to add to that, Jim?
It would just be a caution about commercial compost. I would not generally use that. I
mean,
sometimes, you know, local governments want to get, or organizations want to get rid of stuff, and some of that's not very good. We had it's a situation like that near our place that somebody, a local sawmill, scraped off the remains underneath the logs they were storing, and people put them out and used that and added it to their soil, and it really hurt. It took several years for the whatever chemicals and oil and whatever was inside that to go away.
Yeah.
So So just, if you make compost yourself or you can get it from somebody you know.
Yeah, that would be the best, of course.
Be the best, yeah.
And as far as the soil, and I wouldn't raid the rivers. I mean, that would be silt, particular. I mean, it might grow fine for a while, but you need the whole shebang. I think we've talked about what good soil is composed of. But so if you can get it from your on site, that would be the best.
Yeah,
and the cheapest. All right.
Yeah.
Okay, Mr. Ty, I think it's time that we're going to get started on our musical section. And I thought this was kind of a neat little thing as I was pondering what theme I should have with my music. And that was to tie it all into pruning, of all things. But on the other side of pruning, or the way that we might look at pruning, and these are the things to avoid when pruning. For example, our first selection here is from Matthew Stubbs, and I didn't know this, I had to look this up, but he's most well-known for being the leading Charlie Musselwhite's backup band guitarist himself, Matthew Stubbs. And so I chose a tune called Stubzilla. And one of the things that we don't want to do when we're pruning is to leave stubs. Jim says, no.
No,
we don't want to do no stubs.
No stubs.
And we'll talk about what a stub might be when we get to that after this tune. Matthew Stubbs and Stubzilla. It's from his album called Soulbender. Well, before we get into the pruning, let me just mention our plant of the month, which is fall-planted potatoes, with the goal of having some earlier potatoes to harvest in the spring or early summer, which would be much earlier than if you planted them in the spring. The problem is what we're going to be facing next week. They come up, I have some volunteers that are probably 6 or 8 inches tall now. You know, it's really looking good. Although I must say that they do look a little on the light greenish side because of lack of sunlight this time of year. But this cold weather is just going to wipe them all out. It won't kill the tuber, and it'll send up some more growth, but the new potato will not be nearly the size it would be. And I've done this on purpose, planting potatoes in the fall. And some years you'll do fine, or if you want to take the time to try to protect them. But it's a potato, so just plant them in the spring.
Yeah.
But so anyway, it's kind of fun to see it. And, you know, one thing about potatoes is at least a potato bed. You think you get them all, you never get them all. That's it. So,
yeah.
Okay. So, dormant pruning. It's time.
It is time.
Although, I don't know that I would do it with this until after this cold snap.
I would not be so. If we had dry weather during the cold snap, you know, I mean, if it's a nice crisp fall day with dry day, I would do it myself.
I mean, when it's 25.
Sure.
Okay, it's not gonna be flowing juices because they're dormant.
That's right. I mean, it's a nice time to be outdoors.
Well, unless you're in the wind and it's 25 degrees.
Right. Well, you come out to the liberal nook.
Yeah. Right.
We don't have wind.
No, sometimes sadly. You get the cold temperatures.
Yeah.
And I'll mention here, too, before we get into this dormant pruning thing, is that I tend to do most of my pruning in the summer. Talk about pleasant time to be out pruning. That's the way. And when we dormant prune, the plant has more time to grow, so it'll put on more growth than when you summer prune. And so my trees are my apples and pears are, and we'll talk about what's appropriate to prune now, but my apples and pears are the size that I want them, and so I prune in the summer. We just want to say remember that's an option.
Yeah, I know there's a different result, and I've been pruning in the winter for pretty much all my life, so I'm not, you know, the summer, I pretty much, in the summer, I just don't do pruning.
So, right, you know, right, so. And you probably have different goals for your pruning.
Yeah, partly is for the nursery, it's different too, of course, because I'm trying, trying to create new cuttings, you know, for propagation, but yeah. Generally speaking.
And I'm trying to prevent that. Uh-huh. You know that all right. That new growth,
so. Right, yep. But I do like apples and pears for sure. I do this time of year, and then typically we wait. Either we do fall pruning on prunus like peaches and cherries and so forth, or a more spring pruning after the weather's warmed up a bit and it's not raining. Because the idea of when you do prunus, you really don't want to do it when it's going to rain. Or it's raining because it's going to spread disease more quickly.
So when in the fall and when in the spring?
Well, fall pruning would be before November for sure, and probably even earlier, October, when it's dry, nice. The wounds have time to heal. Before.
They're not quite dormant.
Yeah, they're pretty dormant, but they're still...
They're starting to lose their leaves.
Yes, for sure. And then the spring would be not before March and probably even into April for the prunus. Even some of them are starting to grow, but that seems to work okay.
So that's peaches, cherries, nectarines.
Yeah, apricots.
Apricots.
I laugh about.
Yeah. Except you don't need to worry about that now, some of them anyway.
That's right. I still have some outdoors, which we're testing, but we have... Some inside now, so
okay,
yeah. But yeah, that's kind of the procedure we've used for several years, and the we're not a fruit growing. We're a nursery, so fruit is not our primary goal.
Mm-hmm.
However, we get a lot of fruit, and we have some apples in particular that I've been pretty happy with recently. Just the fruit, I mean, it's so darn good, and I've got grandkids that love to eat it, and we love to eat it, and so I'm trying to do my best to kind of take care of those trees and keep them in production too. And I'm not a commercial fruit tree pruner by trade, but there's some basic things you do to keep the plant happy and producing.
What would that be here then?
Well, this time of year, I mean, it's largely, you know, cutting, removing crossing branches, for example, you know, where you've got a lot of growth and you've got things going inward, or, you know, a branch that's going into the inward rather than outward, I typically remove. If it's crossing, if there's one crossing another, I'll take it out.
Touching crossing,
uh-huh. Right. Thin, weak growth that where it's extended out several times and it's just getting where it's not being, maybe the new shoots are only a couple of inches long or less. You know, I would remove that, prune it back to try to encourage new, more vigorous growth and produce more fruit.
And we mentioned in the musical break there about Stubzilla that we don't want to leave stubs. Well, how would you define a stub?
Well, if you pruned back a branch, normally you had two choices, it seems to me. I mean, you have a shoot that's come out, a branch, let's say. You don't want to have it for some reason. It's too long. You can prune it back to the next, to its base, which is largely mostly the way, one way to do it. And then you definitely don't, you prune it back to the base. So there's a little collar around where it started to grow, and that's where you should prune it to.
Leave the collar.
But that's only just an eighth of an inch, probably, or, mm-hmm. you know, a little bump on that branch. Or if you're trying to create new growth from that, if you like that branch where it's at and you want to make it, you know, more vigorous, you want some vigorous growth, then you'd cut it back to a bud or a smaller branch, for example. Mm-hmm. So, and that might be 8 to 10 inches, something like that. And then it's got a new growing point at the end that will grow out and heal over the wound and make new shoots for increased production.
So the stub could be 2 inches long. You just cut it back, or it could be 4 feet long if it's just cut to make the tree look good or even at the top or something like that.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't call a stub 4 feet long.
Well,
you know, I would call it with the 2 inches. Like, let's say you were pruning and you just were being sloppy in pruning, and you didn't notice you didn't cut back to the to the collar. You just left a inch long piece sticking out.
Yeah,
you know. That's
4 feet. That we would call that something else, but our goal is not to leave just cut it willy nilly.
Yeah.
If you're going to shorten it, either take it back to a crotch.
Yep.
Someplace or a bud.
Yeah.
Not just.
Yeah. Exactly.
Cut it.
Keep in mind that a bud that's not, that has a dormant bud will then, once the next spring will start to grow, and then that will be a growing point, and all the good stuff, all the callus will form at that point.
Okay.
And see, heal that wound.
All right. Well, we'll talk about more pruning when we play more of my musical tunes.
Yeah, and I'd like to also mention before, maybe we can do it after the tune, but about kiwis, because a lot of people have planted and are growing kiwis, and it seems like every year I get questions from people like, you know, what do we do? You know, they grow some of them grow so vigorously and wild, and, you know, what do you do with them?
And one thing before we go to it looks like it's going to be time for the garden stumper here, but it's better, I would say, to prune hard and bad even than to not prune at all if you have a fruit tree in your city lot. Maybe not bad.
We have to define what bad is.
Yeah.
Go too far in that direction.
But. Okay, I retract that. to prune heavily.
Yes. Yeah.
And maybe they'll think, well, you know, people will have said in the past, you know, I'm just afraid on what to cut. Well, don't be. So that's where I mean about it. It's better to make a questionable cut, maybe we'll say that, than to. If you think you should take it off, you should.
Yeah, try it and you'll learn too.
Yeah, it's just a fruit tree.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you will, unless you cut it so severely that you've cut off everything productive on it, you'll get fruit.
Well, we'll see. I changed my mind mid-tree. I was going to take it out. Mm-hmm. So I was using my, you know, battery chainsaw, and it's just so easy.
Yeah.
And then I thought, well, I might just leave this here another year to see what happens. Mm-hmm. I mean, I took out 90% of it.
That's interesting. Yeah, I would advise against pruning with a battery-powered chainsaw. I think that would be, you know, way too easy to take too much.
Well,
your case, you're trying to remove the tree.
If you have a tree that you want to, I mean, this is a whole other topic here, but it's pruning still, you know, to rehab a tree or something like that, mm-hmm. you know, just out of control, you moved in, you know, don't try to do it in 1 year.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, 3 year period.
Yeah.
And then you would have to use a chainsaw.
Yeah, but like we were talking about earlier about this little pruning saw or bigger ones, you're doing it by hand. There's some work involved, and you're going to be probably a little more careful because you know, you're not going to cut a 4-inch branch with it.
Well, that's why I like this chainsaw, because I can and do.
Yeah, no, I understand.
Okay, well, let's You ready for the garden stumper?
Sure.
Okay, let's see what we got here, Ty.
So I was thinking, Glenn, maybe we should give folks the number to call in.
Oh, that's a good idea. I haven't done that.
And because I know that there's going to be so many people who will have the answer that they're going to – it's the first one.
That, okay. Yeah, 503-231-8187.
I'm sure they'll
– My apologies for not mentioning that at the top of the show, meaning because you can call that if you have a gardening question.
And repeat that, Glenn, please.
503-231-8187. We need to make a little jingle so everybody's going to over room.
There you go. Yeah. There's a lot of fruit trees in the world, and a lot of them grow in tropical areas where they won't grow here, and that's okay. You know, I love mangoes, but they don't grow here. But there's a particular fruit tree that I really like a lot. It's an evergreen. So it keeps its leaves year-round. It's a beautiful tree. But it can get quite large, actually. And unfortunately, or fortunately, depending upon where you live, but in our area, it's unfortunate, this tree blooms in the winter.
Along with all of its leaves intact.
So it's a very pretty tree, but it blooms in the winter. And we all know that winter is not a good time for blooming typically because the cold temperatures will hurt the flowers or the forming fruit. So, what is the tree?
Okay. If you know the answer to that, give us a call, 503-231-8187. And the first correct answer will receive a free hand tool, garden hand tool sharpening from Culley Farm Store in Northeast Portland.
And there's probably no better time of year if we have a caller.
That's right. I doubt it's for this, though, because it came in while you were saying it. So. But we will go to the caller. Good morning. You're with the Dirtbag.
Hi, my name is Wade. I've run tree artistry over a few decades. And you were talking about pruning earlier and what time of year.
Yeah.
So I would say that certainly fruit trees, but all trees, large cuts should be done in the winter if possible. I prune two or three times during the summer, especially on ornamentals, because they grow so fast. So it's not that you don't want any new growth, but you don't want a bunch of fluff. More compact it is, the more flowers, you know, everything you'll have.
Yeah,
so
that's
instead of letting something
point.
Grow out a foot and a half and then cutting it back in the fall, and then you have to wait till next spring to get any more new growth. You just, as you see a sucker, it differentiates itself. You know what I'm saying? Usually they turn upright, like a hand raised up. But we want more cantilevered, where the hand is angled out more. Like
that's correct.
Okay.
Yeah. Those are good points.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks. Enjoy the show.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, peace.
One thing I might also mention about that, comment a little bit more about that, if you're pruning in the summer, at least in my opinion, it's best not to prune too late in the summer because you either want to prune really late or fairly early because if you prune and you force new growth to start,
mm-hmm.
Before and it doesn't have a chance to harden off well before winter, then you could have some damage on it, depending on the tree and stuff. But
I think the recommended time is July, middle of July to mid-August. Mm-hmm. But I'll be honest here. I finished pruning I have would be a large pear tree, except I've kept it pruned back for 25 years. Oh, maybe that's 30 years now. And I finish up in September,
mm-hmm.
and I've pruned apple trees even into October, not really caring, you know, what happens. And I've never noticed any damage. So
I think that's I think that's late enough. I mean, then by then plants are going dormant. They're not going to send out. They're going to not like to push new shoots.
Well, I start earlier, but it takes me a month. It's at least, I don't know how many thousands of cuts that I've done this tree. It's an old tree. So, okay. We're going back to the phone. Good morning. You're with the Dirtbag.
Good morning. Good morning. Great. I love your show.
Thank you.
Would that be a pomegranate? Pardon?
Go ahead.
I think I'm going to guess pomegranate.
No. Sorry. Pomegranates are not evergreen, actually. So.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right. Okay, thanks. I'm going to listen to your show again.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, Ty, we have another phone call? Yes. Okay, good morning. You're with the Dirtbag.
Yeah, this is Lee.
Hi, Lee.
I got a suggestion for pruning. I've been doing it on some of my fruit trees, apple and pear. And when I've got a really long, thin whip type thing, I will take it and with a stainless steel small nail, tack it to a branch that's different from the one that it's coming out of, and it will eventually, form a bond with that other branch and form reinforcements on the tree, within the tree.
So well, that should work.
Sort of a mix of carpentry and pruning.
And grafting.
And grafting, that's right.
Yeah, and it really does a nice job because, one branch strengthens another.
Yeah.
And, it's pretty easy to do. And, people who've come by and seen my trees look at me and think that either I'm crazy or a genius.
They both could be right.
But, I listened to Bucky Fuller, and basically what I'm doing is forming lots of little triangles.
Well, I wonder if you could do a Belgian fence type espalier without any type of support, just nailing those trees in the diamond shape.
Yeah.
I don't know. I wouldn't even try that with the deer on my property. They'd enjoy the structure.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Lee.
Yeah.
He's either crazy or he's a genius.
Thanks. Bye.
Yeah. Bye.
I love imagining what that looks like.
Yeah.
Lee, perhaps you could send us a photo sometime. It'd be fun to see.
Yeah, that would be. He could email it to the Dirtbag at kabu.org.
Just the Dirtbag? Or
yeah, the Dirtbag.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. At kbo.org.
Cool. Yep. Okay, back to the phones. We're still looking for the answer, too, but we'll take questions, too. Good morning. You're with the Dirtbag.
Am I on there?
You are.
Oh, well, this is Victoria Ross speaking from Cornelius.
Oh.
And I believe the plant that you're talking about is a camellia.
Well, a camellia is definitely, it's evergreen, but it's not a fruit tree.
Oh, gosh, I forgot that part.
And they do bloom now.
Yeah, they do bloom in the winter. Yeah.
They always remind me of my mother-in-law who had blooming camellias outside of her dining room and living room, too.
Uh-huh.
So.
Yeah.
I'm able to look out there, too.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm stumped.
Okay. Right.
Yeah, it's not an easy one, and it's very uncommon.
Okay.
Plant.
Thank you. Thank you for your answer.
Jim, do we ever see this fruit in the store?
I have not seen it in this region in the store.
I've never, I don't think I've ever tasted one.
Well, I'll give a slight hint is that people grow it in California, where they don't have such cold winter temperatures.
Doesn't narrow it down, Jim.
It's native to southern China.
Okay, well, those are all helpful. For looking it up. Ty is still on the phone there. We may have another guest coming in here.
Is that I?
Yes, it is I.
Okay, I'm back again. I just wanted, because the guy was talking. Oh, wait, before we get up, is it kumquat by any chance? It was just such a strange name of the fruit. I had to throw it out there.
Kumquat.
Kumquat is a citrus, which is evergreen, but unfortunately its bloom time is not the one we're looking for. It's not the winter blooming.
Okay. But back to the guy that just called in about tacking branches to another, what I do is braid branches together. So if I have a sparse one that I think has hope for it, I'll take either one or two and braid them, one this way, one the other way, kind of counter-wound, if you will. And then that forms one more. And this also helps with layering. So what he was describing, suddenly like tack tacking, or I mean, he mentioned stainless steel, I'm glad, but to another branch, it seems like it might get more messy. I'm looking for more separation of branches and showing each branch off.
Well, these are these make some interesting. They would make for some great garden tours.
That's right. That's right.
They will meld together. The branches will form one.
Yeah.
Or you could take them apart. You know, after a couple, it takes years for that to happen.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, jump here and say this pear that I pruned heavily. I pruned off a section where the branches had just naturally, it was so thick, they had grown, they had grafted themselves together. So I thought, well, this is no doubt how somebody years and thousand years ago figured out, hey, this could work here. We could do this on purpose.
Notice that somebody, the way they prune them, that didn't just happen last year. Somebody started that 50 years ago or something. Okay.
Well, great. Thank you.
So I and just to be clear, I probably misspoke slightly on that last suggestion. The kumquat is a citrus. We don't grow them outdoors here, so their bloom time I'm not totally certain about, but it's not hardy. So this tree we're talking about is hardy and blooms in the winter. So it grow. There's a, in fact, on Clinton Street south or near Southeast Clinton Street, there's at least 70, 80 year old tree growing in a Buddhist temple
of
this tree. And I could give if we wanted to like push it along, I could.
We have one more, at least we have another phone. Got two more phones. Well, we'll see before we give out any more hints here. Okay, good morning. You're with the Dirtbag.
Hello?
Yep, that's you.
Okay, so is it a persimmon?
No, persimmon is not evergreen.
Oh, boo.
But I love persimmons.
Yes,
it makes me want my mouth water to mention it, but thank you.
It's a good
guess.
Thanks
a lot. Bye-bye.
You bet. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, and we got one more. Good morning. You're with the Dirtbag. Are we there yet, Ty? Are you there? Okay. Are you there? Nope. Okay. We have another call coming, but let's...
This is fun to have the calls.
Yeah, but we're not getting to... Let's talk about chilling period while we're waiting for this next one to come in here.
All right.
Speaking of fruit trees.
Sure. Well, you know, so chilling period, that's our dictionary term.
Yep.
And basically it refers to the time of the... There are many plants... Not tropical ones typically, but ones that grow in the northern hemispheres that require a certain period of time of cold to go through dormancy so they can then grow happily the next spring. And the reason that nature has done that, of course, is that it gets cold and plants can't keep growing when it's cold, so they need to go to sleep, basically. And that period of time of cold is variable between different plants. The actual temperature range, like this, we could have made this into a garden stumper, but in Fahrenheit is between 32 and about 45 degrees. In, of course, Celsius, it's zero and something less than 10.
About eight.
Probably eight, yeah. But at any rate, that's during that kind of temperatures, which we here in the Pacific Northwest have lots of, satisfies the chilling requirement.
And it doesn't have to be in a straight shot.
No.
It's just you add them up.
It's just a cumulative, right.
And they could be 800 hours, 600 hours, whatever.
1,000 hours in some cases.
So, sorry, you were going to make a point, but I'll finish my thought, is that this week that's coming up where it's all below 32 or whatever, that's not going to count.
Below 32 doesn't work. Yep. It has to be above freezing, just, 32 and above. And, but like, we've had a lot of 40 degrees, 38 recently, that kind of stuff. So it adds up pretty fast. Interestingly, plants from Siberia, which we have been growing at the nursery for a long time and which we like a lot, like the Arctic Beauty Kiwi, they require less chilling. Guess why? So much of the winter is below zero.
Oh, I see.
It's below freezing. And so they don't get the chilling requirement met when it's so darn cold. So they have a short time because they have a little bit in the fall, and then they have a little bit in the spring, right, and then they start to grow.
Yeah, that would be challenging.
Yeah.
Could be challenging to grow here.
And that's why honeyberries, for example, well, years ago we offered honeyberries that came from Siberia, and we realized that they were not so well adapted for us.
Right.
And so we moved to ones that came from Japan, which had a longer chilling requirement.
Yeah.
Anyway, lots of stories like that.
All right. Okay. Yeah. We got three calls. Okay. Back to the phones. Good morning.
Good morning. Is it me?
Yes, you. Yes, please.
Oh, hello. Is it dragon fruit?
No, dragon fruit, again, is not a hardy plant, but good guess.
Do we grow that here, Jim?
No.
No. Okay.
No.
I've seen it in California, so it was a far-reaching guess. Thank you.
Thank you.
That just reminds me to mention, and we've mentioned this before, I think, because I was... It's kind of an aha moment for me. That's why typically they don't grow apples in Southern California.
Yeah, there are certain varieties that they've developed over the years that do have a short chilling period. But I gave an apple tree to my cousin who lives in L.A., and it was struggling from here.
Uh-huh.
It had little tiny fruit on it.
So it's just because they didn't get the 800 hours, we'll say, of that between those temperatures.
That's right. That's
right.
They
might have a week or something like that, but that's way short of
800.
Okay, back to the phones. Nope, not that one. This one. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. You're with the Dirtbag on the air.
All right. Thank you. I was wondering, is the fruit quince?
Boy, we're getting a great variety of fruits, but you know, quince is not an evergreen. It loses its leaves, and it doesn't bloom in the winter either.
I know, because I continually see them on trees. They're such hardy fruit.
Yeah.
It's
thank you.
Beautiful fruit, fragrant fruit. We had our last show, we talked about quince.
Yeah, that's right.
It was fun.
Okay, so thanks for calling.
I can give another hint.
Do we have any more calls, Ty? Yeah, one call. Okay, we're good. This is the last chance before we get another hint. Hi, you're on the air with the Dirtbag. Nope. Okay, give a hint, Jim.
Okay. So the gentleman earlier suggested the fruit kumquat. And the name of this fruit is similar.
Uh-huh. Similar sounding. Okay.
But I can just hear the phones dialed rapidly right now.
Yeah. We may have to... forego some of our musical guests, musical selections here. Maybe I'll save them till next week or next month, because pruning in February too is fine.
Sure.
But we want to talk about the Oregon story, or an Oregon story.
Oh, and I'm really glad you brought that up, Glenn.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited to tell the listeners that this documentary that I was working on for quite a long time, which basically tells this fascinating story about Oregon and how we, as compared to other states, created a land use planning program that protected our coastline and has protected our farmland for 50 years. Well, the documentary is now scheduled to be shown at the St. John's Twin Cinemas in the evening of January 17th and at the Hollywood Theater in the afternoon of January 21st. So a matinee. It was very, very cool that we were able to get that matinee showing. And you can go to those two different theaters, St. John's Twin Cinemas. I don't have their email addresses in my head right now, but either one of those and purchase tickets for those showings. And I will be there and talk about the film at the beginning and all that. But you will see some amazing archival footage. We interviewed a great number of people who helped create that system and also have defended it for the last 50 years. And the vast majority of Oregonians, you know, we just don't know this story. And like I said, it's like unique. We're unique in the country to have done this. And we needed it, and we're hoping to keep it that way. And we also want folks to make sure they contact their legislators and tell them how important it is to Oregon to maintain our land use planning program and protect our farmland, which feeds us all. And you know, just mention real quickly about the fact that we have urban growth boundaries. They're not set in stone. You can't expand them. But the idea is that, you know, when you drive outside of a city in Oregon, you don't drive into strip malls and subdivisions. You drive into farmland. And that's precious.
And that's going to probably be coming up in the short session that the legislature has.
There's
going
to be bills that are going to attempt to weaken is what we predict. And we want everybody, you know, to try to say something about that, because Oregon is such a great state to live, work, farm, and recreate, and let's keep it that way.
So you have St. John's. You have four or five showings here. Just briefly mention where are those, and then we'll get back to
the
phones.
Sure. So we actually have six theater showings in January. There's St. John's is January 17th, St. John's Twin Cinemas. January 18th is in Eugene at the Art House Theater. January 19th is in Corvallis at the Dark Side Cinemas. And then January 21st, we have a showing at the matinee in Portland at the Hollywood Theater. And then the evening showing at the Salem Cinema on January 21st. And then we will also have there's also a community showing, not at a theater, at the Ruins in Hood River on January 25th. So I know there's some listeners that are tuning in from Hood River. So that would be another great opportunity to see it. And that's sponsored by a group called Thrive, T-H-R-I-V-E. And they have a website. I think it's thrive.com. I'm not certain of that, but or maybe .org. But anyway, I'm sure people can find that. And you can go to our website, anoregonstory.com, and you can find all this information, all the details and website addresses and so forth to get tickets and find out the timing of all these different showings. But I'm really excited that we're I'm going to try to be at every one of them. So I hope
Be leading a discussion before or after?
There's going to be an introduction, which we'll be talking about some of the issues, and then introducing the film, and then afterwards there'll be a panel discussion with folks who are very knowledgeable about the land use planning, okay. And we'll talk more about it.
Great. Well, yeah. Come and see Jim.
Thanks for letting me talk about it, Glenn.
Okay, we have a couple more phone calls. Maybe we have an answer before we give that away. Good morning. You're on the air with the Dirtbag.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
I sure can. Loud and clear.
Is it a pawpaw?
No, pawpaw is not evergreen.
What about Japanese apricot?
Great choice. Great idea, but not it. Sorry.
But
I love all the guesses.
Yeah,
thank you
always
so much.
Nice kind of exotic fruits that we can grow and do grow.
That's right. Hey,
was there another one, Ty? No? Yes?
Hello?
Oh, yep. You're on the air. Go
Is
ahead.
Me?
Yep.
Yeah, okay. Okay, well, just by a long shot, I don't even know if it grows in where it's cold. But in Florida, I remember there was... a tree called a loquat.
Yeah, you got it.
Just in the nick of time.
Amazing. Yeah.
Wow.
Loquat.
Yeah, I never seen them up north this far, you know. So when we were kids, we used to eat loquats all the time.
Yeah, yeah. That's Florida. That's you made our point exactly.
But that's very good guess. I mean, it's a hardy tree. As I said, there's a tree here in Portland. It's been through a lot of cold spells and doing quite well. And we grow them out at the nursery. But the biggest challenge is the fact that it blooms in the winter. So in California, it will bear fruit. But here, very rarely do you ever get any fruit on it.
What was your name again, caller?
My name is Barry.
Barry, okay. If after we get done with you here, if you stay on the phone, Ty can get either your phone number or an email, and then I can send you the certificate, so to speak, so you can get this free garden tool, hand tool, sharpened at that Coley Farm Store.
And I'm really happy we got a right answer. Because for all the people who were made the guesses, you know, all of you, thank you so much.
Yeah, it was a good one there, too. Yeah. Okay, Jim, we're out of time. We're scooting.
Okay. All right, Glenn.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for all those calls. Thanks for listening. We'll be back in 5 weeks. This is Glenn Andreessen. Be well.